You are listening to Radio Aryan.
Welcome to Aryan Britannia. Today's date is Monday the 3rd of June 2019 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at RadioAryan.com. Well, you've just got me today hosting the show. Hopefully Max will be back next week because I would like to ask him about his thoughts on whether there could have been any vote tampering with the EU elections last week with Tommy Robinson. Hopefully we'll get that from him next week and his views on the EU elections. Over the last week, we've had quite a bit of news of interest to nationalists, quite a bit of celebrities in the news last week. We had John Cleese famously saying that England just isn't England anymore. Now, this is a tweet that he actually sent out a couple of years ago. And or something he said a couple of years ago, rather. And, of course, he got lots of attacks in the media for that, lots of attacks from the left, just for pointing out the truth that London is 60% non-white. It's multicultural. So, of course, it doesn't feel like England anymore. That is a fact. But you're not supposed to speak the facts in a politically correct country. So he repeated that in a tweet, basically saying that all his friends say the same. And this is the same up and down the country. Everybody is talking about this. Everybody is saying the country doesn't feel like it's Britain any longer because it's fast being taken over by foreigners. And the left really don't have anything to say about this because it is a fact that London is 60% non-white. And they just complain that it's racist to say things like that. How would they feel if Lhasa in Tibet, if that was 60% Han Chinese? I'm sure they would have quite a bit to say about that the Tibetans were being replaced in their own country. But of course, they don't have anything to say about it happening in white countries because they're white countries. David Lammy responded to John Cleese's tweet. He was speaking to an audience at the Hay Festival, which is a literature festival. And he said this. I had a bit of a row with John Cleese. My parents came to London because Britain came to them. They love this country, made a contribution to the country, and I challenged John Cleese, let's not define Englishness by solely your DNA. Let us define it by shared values in the country that we all live in. Let's have a civic nationalism, not an ethnic nationalism. Well, what does he mean by that? Does he mean that anybody that shares the same values that the English people do anywhere in the world, they can just call themselves English? Anyone that shares the values of the English that live in Britain can call themselves English. Is that what he is saying? That's kind of like saying that because cats like to sleep the same as dogs like to sleep, cats are the same as dogs. They're not. And it doesn't matter where you were born. You are still the same person. If a cat gives birth to kittens on your bed, that doesn't mean that cat becomes a human. That is still a cat. A dog born in a barn is still a dog. It's not a horse. David Lammy is black. He can't be English. He cannot claim the heritage that comes with being English. All the things that have been invented by the English people, all the things that have been written by the English people, all the things that were built in this country by English people that were created for the posterity of the English people. And he seems to think that he has an entitlement to it just if he shares the same values as the people that built it. Could you go and just, I don't know, take over a house, squat the house and say, well, it's my house now because I share the same values as the owner of the house? who logic is just not there. And yet David Lammy doesn't see that the logic is not there. And so many of our own white people don't see that the logic isn't there. They've been taught not to actually think about these things. So he thinks that his parents, because his parents loved Britain, they can just call themselves English. Well, of course they love Britain. It's far better country than Jamaica or any of the countries in Africa where his heritage is from. What contribution did they make to the country? They were basically housed when they came over here. They may have worked. And of course, they were recompensed for that work. They were given money for that work, which they probably sent back to the Caribbean. They had access to the hospitals. They had access to education. David Lammy was educated in this country. It's not that they made a contribution to Britain. It's that Britain gave a lot to them. It's like saying, let's not define royalty by the royal bloodline. Let's not define royalty by the Windsor bloodline. You can just claim to be a prince or a king or a queen just because you share the values with the king and the queen. It's ridiculous. It's total nonsense that we're seeing here. Elton John, I think he chimed in on this as well, and we'll be talking about him a little bit later on. Thankfully, I think there was a lot of support for John Cleese in what he said, but of course, he's not really anyone that promotes nationalist ideals at all. To be calling him a racist for saying this is ridiculous. I mean, he's very anti-nationalism. But I do see a spark of hope in this Tory party leadership election. Last week we had Dominic Raab, who I've mentioned on here before. Last week Dominic Raab said, "I'm not a feminist." And that is a very brave thing to say for a conservative leader in waiting, to say that they are not a feminist. I mean, it's become almost a requirement that anybody that wishes to be in government has got to be a particularly vocal feminist and leftist and sign up to all these leftist ideals. And Dominic Raab said, I am not a feminist. He is for equality, but equality under the law, not equality of outcomes, which is socialism. And he's pointed that out. It's not conservative to be a feminist. David Cameron saying he's a feminist. Well, you can't be a conservative and be a feminist. This is really, you know, really good of Dominic Raab to say this. And last week he said that he wanted to have more protections for free speech and more protections for jury trials. Another subject that we're going to get into a little bit later on today, jury trials. Up against Dominic Raab, of course, we have Boris Johnson. We also have Rory Stewart, who is really the clown candidate. He is such a state, such a wet drip. He announced last week that he was going to be heading off to some market or other, and if anybody wanted to talk to him, they could. I think he was going to a fish market or something. I don't think anybody turned up to actually talk to him or question him. And he says that if Boris Johnson gets in, then he's going to refuse any offers to be in the cabinet. Well, I doubt very much whether Boris Johnson would want him in the cabinet. He's standing on a platform of no Brexit, basically. Brexit, of course, means a clean break. It means leaving the customs union. It means leaving the Schengen zone. And it means leaving the European Court of Human Rights. That's what leaving the EU is. And of course, that's what everybody's been calling it, a no-deal Brexit. And he wants to prevent there being a no-deal Brexit. So he's standing on a platform of there being no Brexit, and he wants to double foreign aid. He wants to double the amount of money that this country gives to freeloaders in the third world. And surprise, surprise, he's actually responsible for giving out the money in foreign aid. That's his actual job at the moment in government. So, of course, he's probably the leader in waiting that the Conservative Party MPs in Theresa May's cabinet would rather have. But the Conservative leader that the Conservative Party members would rather have, I suggest, would probably be either Dominic Raab or Boris Johnson. And also Dominic Raab resigned at the first sign of Theresa May's treacherous treaty that she did behind his back. He was responsible for the Brexit section, the Brexit part of the government that was supposed to be arranging this deal. And of course, Theresa May ignored that and went and did her own deal. And he resigned at that on principle. So I think he definitely could do a better job than Theresa May anyway. Donald Trump is coming over this week. He may already be over here. He's coming over for the D-Day celebrations. Of course, he's spoken out. He has spoken out that he thinks Boris Johnson would be a good choice for prime minister. I guess he's forgetting that before Donald Trump was actually elected, Boris Johnson was quite vociferous in his antagonism towards Donald Trump being elected. I guess since Boris was the foreign secretary, he must have had more to do with Donald Trump than we've really heard about over here in Britain. He's also been talking about Nigel Farage, how he thinks Nigel Farage should be given a role in the negotiations. And of course, that's something that we have said right since the first vote was cast for Brexit. We've said Nigel Farage should be involved in the negotiations. The British government should just hand it all over to Farage to deal with and get on with running the country. Of course, that's far too sensible for them to do. So they said, well, no, we're going to keep Nigel Farage out of it completely. We don't want him to have anything to do with it. And of course, that's now returned to give them a savage beating when he won with his Brexit party in the EU elections last week. If they know what's good for them, then they will, I think, put Nigel Farage in charge of the negotiations. And really, they should have made him some kind of diplomatic envoy between America and Britain. Maybe they could create a specific role for him as some kind of advisor. He's certainly probably the most popular politician that there is in Britain. Now, I have my criticisms of him. I very much do have criticisms of him in the way he threw UKIP under the bus and called them Nazis and thugs and all the rest of it. But I think he's certainly going to do a better job than Theresa May or any of the politicians that are in power at the moment. As I say, Donald Trump is coming over for the D-Day celebrations in Portsmouth, which is where most of the fleet left from to go and attack France. It's called the Liberation of France, but it was basically attacking France. And of course, there will be lots of the British Army there who really aren't in a much better state than the American Army. I'm sure most of our listeners saw the pictures of the graduates from West Point over there in America a couple of weeks back. Lots of overweight Negroes. And of course, this is why the army makes so many mistakes and costs so much money. And we're not much better over here in Britain with our advertisements calling for crybabies and SJWs and Muslims and cowards to join the army. And last week we also heard about how the army has a special checklist that people are supposed to be looking for in order to alert them to extremists in the army. And this report of that comes from Breitbart. Soldiers describing themselves as patriots or using words such as Islamo-fascism or traitors could be a sign they are right-wing extremists, according to a leaked document from the British Army. But just think about that. They're saying that using the word patriotism or patriots could be a sign that you are a right-wing extremist. Well, let's look up what the word patriotism actually means in the dictionary. Love of one's country. The passion which moves a person to serve his country, either in defending it from invasion or in protecting its rights and maintaining its laws and institutions. So patriotism is directly related to serving in the army. It's supposed to be the inspiration for somebody wishing to serve in the army in the first place. And here they are now saying that to have that feeling means that you could be a right-wing extremist. I mean, we have come full circle. Years ago, that would have been the first thing that you wanted to ascertain from the person that wanted to join the army was the reason for why he wanted to join it. Whether he was just in it for the money or whether he really believed in putting his life on the line to serve his country. I mean, what are they saying here? They just want mercenaries in the army now? They want people that are just there for the money, that aren't there actually because they want to serve their country, they want to serve their people, they love their people or their country? And the word patriot itself comes from patria, it comes from father, it's related to fatherland, and it's also related to ethnicity, of course. A shared father, a nation all has, at the very beginning point, the nation all has one father. As pointed out, actually, in the New Testament, when the Jews start saying, we don't have two fathers, where they're trying to claim that they're not actually racial bastards. So the British Army don't want patriots in the army. But that's not all. Originally written in 2017, the leaflet, Extreme Right-Wing Indicators and Warnings, was sent to senior defence staff to educate chains of command on the indicators and warnings of personnel who may harbour extremist views. Among the 24 thoughts and expressions listed, the leaflet advised recipients to look out for soldiers who describe themselves as patriots and Adistan to British place names. Now that's quite interesting, that actual extension to the word Istan that we get after Afghanistan and Pakistan, it's actually related to the word town. So it's like Afghani's town and Paki's town. It's like the old word tun, which means an enclosure, like Southampton, Northampton, Bridlington, that tun that's at the end there, T-O-N. It's short for an enclosure. It's where we get the word town from, and it's where the tan bit comes from in Afghanistan and Pakistan. And the fact that they have these names, Afghanistan and Pakistan, it shows that it was originally Indo-Europeans that colonized those areas, and that's where the language came from. It's an Aryan language. It's a white language. Those parts of the world used to be white. They used to have white civilizations there, and we can tell that from that word. And it also means that to call somebody a Paki, that can't be offensive, because the name of the country itself is effectively saying Paki's town, Paki's tan. Same with Afghani. The way that they have just arbitrarily made these words into forbidden taboo words is quite amazing, really, that they're able to get away with it. People just don't think for themselves anymore. The leaflet advised recipients to look out for soldiers who use the term Islamofascism. And of course, that's a very alt-light term there. It's not a term that we would ever use here at Radio Aryan, because we know that fascism fought against communism, and fascism would be fighting against the Islamization of Europe as well. Fascism is about uniting together for a common cause. And if you're going to bundle some sticks together so that you've got the extra strength there, which is what a fasci is, you want those sticks to all be the same length. You want them to be made out of the same wood. You want them to be the same size. So to have an effective fasci handle, it has to be made out of the same stuff. Effectively, a nation, an ethno-nation. And Islam doesn't believe in nations. Islam says that it's perfectly fine to sleep with your slaves and interbreed. There's nothing about nations and God creating the nations in the Quran. It's an anti-Christian, anti-God religion that tries to break down and destroy what God has created. Islam has nothing to do with fascism, and it's not the fascists that support Islam. It's the communists that support Islam. It's the far left that are supporting Islam. So that's not a term that we would ever use. I think this this leaflet is aimed at Tommy Robinson supporters and alt-light types that really don't actually know the arguments that well outside of just being against Islam. The leaflet advises to look out for soldiers who involve colleagues in closed social media groups. Well, I think that's common throughout the country. People have closed social media groups that, you know, they don't want their wives seeing the sort of jokes that they're telling their best buddies, do they? I mean, having a closed social media group, I think that would apply to everyone. Refer to political correctness as some kind of left-wing or communist plot. Well, I mean, even Dominic Raab is referring to political correctness as being left-wing and feminism as being left-wing. I've heard Michael Gove talk about virtue signalling. And they're all starting to use the language that originally began among nationalists. I mean, this really shows you that the British Army has become a politically correct leftist institution that is all about enforcing political correctness among its members, rather than putting together one of the best defensive forces in the world. Finally, they say, people who make inaccurate generalizations about the left or government. And of course, who gets to term whether a generalization is inaccurate or not is, of course, the left. The Ministry of Defense confirmed that the document obtained by the Mail Online was genuine, with a spokesman saying, the values of our armed forces and the nation they serve are totally incompatible with extremist views. We have robust measures in place to ensure those exhibiting these views are not permitted to serve. Interesting that there's nothing about Islamic extremist views in there. Islamic extremists are quite welcome in the army, it would seem, but those of you with feelings of patriotism that wish to serve their country, they're not welcome. Exhibiting one or two of these in no way suggests someone is an extremist, and the card does not suggest that all patriots are extremists. Yes, but one or two there, but as I say, you can pick out three or four that actually apply to people that are actually in government. Through the government's counter-terrorism and counter-extremism strategies, the MOD takes a comprehensive approach to tackling all forms of extremism and terrorism. Well, it doesn't look like it from this. It looks like they are picking on the less than 1% of terrorism that's actually carried out by people with nationalist sympathies. The document was produced after the 2017 arrest of four soldiers accused of links with the proscribed National Action Group. And I think there was actually only one of them, I think, was jailed. That was Mikko Vevalainen. I don't think the other three soldiers were found guilty. Last year, the British Army was criticised for its perceived heavy-handed approach after it threatened to investigate a group of young soldiers who posed for a photograph later published on social media with right-wing activist and citizen journalist Tommy Robinson. And of course, Tommy Robinson is not an extremist. I mean, the government and the establishment like to pretend that he's an extremist, but he's not. He's a multiculturalist. He just criticises Islam. The fact that they are policing the army to see if anybody supports, a legitimate political candidate for the EU, again, it shows that this is political persecution. This is trying to persecute people simply for having a different viewpoint, simply for supporting the alternative, the opposition to what is in power at the moment. The army released a statement saying far-right ideology is completely at odds with the values and ethos of the armed forces, before saying that any military personnel in breach of the army's values and standards will face administrative action. Well, how about they actually define what far-right ideology actually is? Because it's just whatever a journalist decides it is. It's just whatever these leftist pressure groups decide it is. There's no definition of what far right actually means anymore. It just seems to mean anybody that disagrees with what the left are saying. We never hear at all about the far left or the extreme left unless you're actually looking at nationalist content. So the British Army continues to go down the drain, basically. I do feel sorry for members of the British Army. They must be particularly demoralised with the way that they're being presented by the top brass there. We've got another news story that I wanted to talk about in this first half, and that was the National Action Trial that's been going on for 2 months now, I think, possibly 3 months. I mean, this has been an absolutely huge trial, basically to try and convict four people as being members of National Action. And this comes from the BBC. Jurors have failed to reach verdicts against four people accused of being in neo-Nazi group National Action. When do we ever hear of neo-Bolshevik group? Neo-Bolshevik group, hope not hate. Or neo-Bolshevik group, the Socialist Party. We never do. I mean, these people claim to be objective, and yet they use slurs in their very language that is supposed to be writing a report about a court case. Alice Cutter, 22, and fiancé Mark Jones, 24, had denied being members. Gary Jack, 23, and Connor Scotton, 18, also denied any wrongdoing. The jury was discharged after deliberating for more than 37 hours. And that's particularly interesting that they just put that they were discharged after deliberating for more than 37 hours, because they actually started deliberating on May the 7th, 24 days ago. The BBC, and it is all the other newspapers, are actually reporting pretty much in exactly the same wording, reporting this. And they're all saying they were deliberating for more than 37 hours. I think what they're trying to do is hide it from the general public, just how long this jury have been deliberating. 24 days they have been trying to decide whether these four people were actually members of National Action or not. I mean, this must be costing an absolute fortune. The 11 members at Birmingham Crown Court were unable to reach verdicts on any of the defendants. Prosecution barrister Barnaby Jameson QC told the judge that a retrial would be sought. Now, I always thought that if a jury was unable to reach a verdict, the judge says, well, can you reach a majority verdict? Could you reach a verdict with just 11 of you? And if they can't, the judge will say, can you reach a verdict with just 10 of you? Can you reach a majority verdict with just 10 of you? And if you cannot reach a majority verdict with 10 of you, then that means that they can't be convicted of the crime. They can't be guilty of the crime. They cannot be certain that someone is guilty of the crime, and they're free to go, normally. It seems that in these National Action trials, when the jury cannot actually reach a verdict, cannot even reach a majority verdict, where normally people would be free to go, the courts are saying, well, we're just going to keep you in prison anyway, and we'll see whether another jury gets the result that we want. It's like what the courts are actually saying is, we know this person is guilty, even though the jury has told us that they are not guilty. And the courts are saying this before the trial has even been heard. I mean, that's why they're actually putting there, what the courts are saying is, we think this person is guilty, so we're going to put them on trial, and the jury has the final word on that. If the jury says, well, we can't find them guilty, that means that there wasn't enough evidence to convict them, and they should be free to go. But that's not happening. Remember, in the last National Action case, three young men were found to not be members of National Action. And again, the jury couldn't reach a verdict. And I think two of them were in jail for 18 months. 18 months while being accused of being terrorists, while being all in the newspapers and the mainstream media, writing about them as being terrorists. And they were in jail for 18 months. One of them was in jail for 12 months, Garen Helm. He was then found not to be a member of National Action. But the other two were still in jail for another half a year. Think about that. A year and a half in jail for something you didn't do, for a crime you didn't commit. And it looks like we've got exactly the same thing happening here. We've got four people here. Three of them will be going back to jail because one of them is a female, of course. And again, what we see here is unequal treatment. I don't think any of these people that have been accused of being members of a group that haven't actually carried out any violent acts or any preparations for violent acts, then really they should be on bail. They shouldn't be in prison where they have to be put into solitary confinement to protect them from the rest of the prisoners, because they think that these people that are there on remand are terrorists because of what the newspapers say. And solitary confinement is a cruel and unusual punishment. It's a form of torture. And this young lady, she won't be in prison. She won't be imprisoned. She didn't do a runner. She turned up okay in the court. So why did they put the others in prison there? A 24-year-old man, a 23-year-old man, and an 18-year-old man. And you think about that last one, Connor Scotton. He's only 18, and he's already been in jail for almost a year for a crime that there wasn't even enough evidence for the courts to convict him. And when we actually look at the evidence of this, once again, it's just people talking in chat rooms. It's not people making plans to carry out violent acts. It's not people making plans to go on demonstrations. And if you look at National Action, what they actually did, they went on demonstrations and they produced a blog with updates of what they were doing every month. So you could say, if there were some of these ex-members and they were going on demonstrations, you could say that that was National Action in another form. But to say that they are members of National Action simply because they are talking in a chat room together, I think that is stretching the definition a little bit too far. And this is why these juries can't convict them, because it goes against all common sense. It's a great shame that it's happening, but I do hope that they think better of this and just say, well, we'll just leave this because we tried them once and they couldn't reach a verdict. And in the last trial, they did the same. They tried them a second time and they still couldn't reach a verdict. So if they do push it, then I just hope that justice is done. And because it does look like our faith in jury trials is being upheld, because when there isn't enough evidence, the jury is saying, well, there isn't enough evidence. If these cases had been heard just in front of a magistrate, these people would have just been found guilty, and that would have been a miscarriage of justice. And don't forget, after the last National Action trial, there was a Labour MP that stood up in Parliament and said, well, perhaps we ought to get rid of jury trials, when it was found that three of these young men were found to not be members of National Action. She said, well, maybe we should get rid of jury trials then. Instead of believing what the jury said, this evidence is not good enough to convict, they thought, well, we'll just get rid of those people and we'll just have arbitrary justice instead. And this is why I'm saying it's good that Dominic Raab has pointed out that we need more protection for jury trials. Anyway, that brings us to halfway, so we're going to have a bit of a music break now. This is a band from Ukraine called Sokira Peruna, which translates as the Axe of Perun. And this is a track called The Heroes of My Race. And I'll be back in 5 minutes. Живуть віки. We've just been listening to Sokira Peruna from Ukraine, and that track was called The Heroes of My Race. If you do like your nationalist music, then check out Eternal Reich's Audio Insurgency, which we have on Wednesdays here. All sorts of music on there. Neo-classical, synthwave, metal, death metal, folk, neo-folk. It's a very varied nationalist music show that takes in all the different countries of the world where we have nationalist types, white folk, creating music. Do check it out. It's a great show. As I say, it's on Wednesdays. And we're actually going to talk about a British musician now, rather embarrassed to say that he is British, and that's Elton John. And I guess people can't have missed all the promotion, the flurry of promotional activity that is surrounding Elton John at the moment, because he's got a biopic out of himself, which of course is going to be extremely flattering to him. It's called Rocket Man, and he's a little bit upset because apparently the film has been censored in Russia, which certainly brought a smile to my face. Elton John has publicly hit out following his biopic Rocket Man being heavily edited in Russia to remove any scenes of homosexual kissing and gay sex between men in the film. A joint statement from Elton and the filmmakers read, "We reject in the strongest possible terms the decision to pander to local laws and censor Rocket Man for the Russian market, a move we were unaware of until today." I mean, look at the arrogance in that. To say that it's pandering to local laws. It's against the laws of Russia. It's against the laws of the Russian Federation to promote homosexuality to children. If they think they should be censoring this film, then that is because they think that it is promoting homosexuality to children. I mean, that's not local laws. That's not like local bylaws, like, don't paste up advertisements for the local nightclub on the telegraph poles. I mean, this is a countrywide law with a prison sentence for breaking it. And they describe it as pandering to local laws. And it's not just local laws. I mean, it's the law of morality. It is basic morality that homosexual acts are immoral and unnatural. And people engaging in them used to be thrown to their death in the local bog, is how European people always treated it. They just see it as being local laws. Paramount Pictures have been brave and bold partners in allowing us to create a film which is a true representation of Elton's extraordinary life, warts and all. That the local distributor has edited out certain scenes, denying the audience the opportunity to see the film as it was intended, is a sad reflection of the divided world we still live in, and how it can still be so cruelly unaccepting of the love between two people. So graphic details of one night stands, do they feature in all biopics then? Do most people that want to have a film made of their lives, do they really want the public to see them engaging in deviant sex throughout the film? I mean, that's what this is. You're talking about homosexual acts throughout the film. 5 minutes in all was removed from it. I mean, that is a hell of a lot to remove from a film. I mean, this is gratuitous, I would suggest, if they've removed 5 minutes worth of it from this. "We believe in building bridges and opening dialogue, and we will continue to push for the breaking down of barriers until all people are heard equally across the world." But why do they want to break down barriers? What are barriers for? Barriers are there for safety. That's what barriers are for. You have safety barriers. And Elton John wants to break down the safety barriers, and he wants to force his deviant sexual lifestyle upon innocent filmgoers that have gone there because they like his music. And this is the same with these homosexuals. They know what they are doing is wrong. And they feel bad about doing it. They feel guilt about doing it. They won't admit it, but they feel guilt about doing it. And the way they think that they can lift some of that guilt from themselves is if they force these acts upon everybody else. And if they can get everybody else to accept them, then that guilt is lifted slightly because it's shared between everyone. That's the logic behind this. That is the internal reasoning that goes on in their subconscious minds. That's why they promote gay pride and force these homosexual acts upon innocent people, because they think that then they will be able to get the rest of the world to accept this, then the guilt is shared, and then the guilt is partially lifted from themselves. I mean, why on earth would anybody want to break down safety barriers? It's just totally illogical. The same as gay sex is totally illogical. Also proving his disappointment at the editing, Taron Egerton, who portrays Elton in the biopic, took to Instagram to air his opinion. The actor, 29, typed, "I am crestfallen that the decision was made to censor our movie for the Russian market." Russian journalist Anton Dolin shared that around 5 minutes of the film had been chopped as a result of so-called anti-gay propaganda laws in conservative Russia, which bans gay sex scenes in cinema since 2013. Note the way they call it so-called anti-gay propaganda laws. Why do they have to have that so-called behind it? I mean, that's what this is. And it's not anti-gay propaganda. It's against the promotion of homosexuality and deviant sexual acts to children. That's what they leave out of this. It's about promoting it to under 18s. That's what the law is about. It's not a so-called anti-gay propaganda law. It's a law to protect children. It's to protect children from having sodomy promoted to them. I mean, what person in their right mind wants to see sodomy promoted to children? At the moment over here in Britain, we've got lots of demonstrations and protests that are going on outside a Muslim school because they don't want their five-year-olds to be taught sodomy is good. And they're quite sensible in doing that. It is quite interesting to see the left not knowing quite who they should be supporting in this, whether they should be supporting the gay teacher that is trying to force this homosexual promotion on the children, or the Muslims that are campaigning to not have this taught to their children. But if you're in Russia, they stick to traditions and they say, well, if you're an adult and you want to do that, that's up to you, but we're not going to have you promoting it to children, and we're not going to have Elton John doing it. Doesn't matter how famous Elton John is, he's not going to get away with breaking the law in Russia. No matter how big he thinks he is, he's not bigger than the law. Dolin described the cut as nasty and added "Sorry, Sir Elton" in a social media post about the deleted scenes. He posted on Facebook, "All scenes with kissing, sex, and oral sex between men have been cut out." I mean, that's going to be pretty graphic, isn't it? You're talking about anal sex there, because he's making a differentiation between sex and oral sex. So he's talking about buggery. Scenes with buggery in have been cut out. I bet there are a lot of people out there, especially fans of Elton John, that would much rather see the Russian edit of the film than the version that Elton John wanted people to see. He says, "The most nasty thing is that the final caption has been removed from the finale." The final caption was a reference to the two boys who have been deprived of a mother by Elton and his boyfriend. They basically bought two children so that they could pretend to be the parents of the two children. And obviously, Russia doesn't want children to think that that's possible. Russia doesn't want children to think that it's possible for children to be sold to two men so that they can pretend that they are actually the parents of the child. I mean, that's a horrific thing to happen, and it's a horrific thing for children to think about. I wonder if this problem that we have with children all being depressed and having to take antidepressants, I wonder if that actually exists in Russia. I wonder how the mental health of the children in Russia compares to the mental health of the children in the West. And this film must be aimed at children for the censors to have removed all of these disgusting acts. All scenes with kissing, sex, and oral sex between men have been cut out. Well, it would have only been cut out if this film was aimed at children, wouldn't it? That's the thing. The law is against promoting it to children. And Elton John and the people involved in this film, that's what they're complaining about. They think that should be shown to children. The movie took only 5 minutes out, but it's very noticeable. Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. 5 minutes worth of sexual acts in a movie, that is a hell of a lot, because you really don't see much sexual acts on film for much of the film. Otherwise, it becomes little more than pornography. So that's what it sounds like this is. There's gay pornography in the film. He continues, it's about a principled 5 minutes. Very important for artistic purposes. So they think it's principled to be showing this filth on the cinema screen. Dolan also alleges that Paramount studio representatives were present at the edited premiere screening in Russia yesterday. And again, I find that makes me smile as well. Obviously, the Paramount studio representatives, they weren't too interested in the principled artistic purposes. They were more concerned with not breaking the law and actually being able to screen their film in Russia. Elton can forget about his artistic purposes when it comes to making money, I guess. According to the Moscow Times, the Russian Culture Ministry did not order the scenes to be cut. Instead, the movie was edited by the distributor Central Partnership to comply with Russian laws. Again, it must have been so obvious that this film was breaking the law. That's why they cut it. It's not like this came from Putin saying, well, you've got to cut this out. Anything that's going to be shown in Russia has to comply with Russian laws and not promote sodomy to children. A spokesman from the Central Partnership told the paper, changes were made to the film to comply with the legislation of the Russian Federation. Elton John has himself said the studio wanted to tone down the sex and drugs in the movie, but he wanted the biopic to be an accurate representation of his early life. So there we have a confirmation that Elton wanted to shock and disgust people with deviant sexual acts. He wanted the people that watched the film to accept these deviant sexual acts as normal and lessen his own personal guilt at indulging in them. That's the psychology behind this. I think it's great that Russia have that law and they stick to that law and they won't allow Brits and Americans and rich Westerners to override that and claim that what they're doing is artistic. I mean, this is how the laws regarding what can be shown on a screen were subverted in the first place in the West, was by saying that it was for artistic purposes. If you were going to be showing pornography on the screen, just so long as there was a certain amount of academic talk in the film as well, you could get away with saying that was just there for artistic purposes and it wasn't gratuitous. So Elton's got the right language here, hasn't he, claiming that it's artistic. It's filth. That's what it is, and the Russians don't want it. And that's not the only thing Elton has been in the news for, as I said, alongside this tweet from John Cleese. He's also been attacking Brexiteers. The UK's handling of the Brexit process and its associated outcomes has left Elton John feeling ashamed of his homeland. While performing on Wednesday in Verona, Italy, on his global farewell tour, The Guardian reports he told the audience, I'm ashamed of my country for what it has done. It's torn people apart. I am sick to death of politicians, especially British politicians. I am sick to death of Brexit. I am a European. I am not a stupid, colonial, imperialist, English idiot. And I guess that's what he's referring to Brexiteers as. But what does he think the European Union is? What does he think the European Union is, if not imperialist? I mean, the EU is an empire, and it's a part of a greater empire, part of the greater American empire, the New World Order. It's all about collecting all these countries together and having them under an unaccountable rule. That is imperialism. And he seems to think that the people that want our sovereignty back, the Brexiteers that want our sovereignty back, that's being imperialist. And if you're a nationalist, the last thing you are is colonial. We don't want to rule these Negroes in their black countries. We want them to go back there. We don't want to be ruling over them. We don't want to be colonizing the black countries. We just want them to go back. So we're not colonial. I mean, this, what he's trying to do here is project his own views onto other people. I mean, this colonial bit, I mean, we've just heard about how he thinks that he shouldn't have to obey the local laws in Russia. I mean, can you get more of a colonial attitude than that, and thinking that because he's a European, he doesn't have to actually obey the laws in other countries? This is not the first time the 72-year-old singer has voiced his opinion over Brexit. In July 2018, he argued that British voters hadn't been told the truth and had been promised something that could not be delivered. I don't think people in Britain were told the truth to start with. They were promised something that was completely ridiculous and wasn't economically viable, Elton John said. Well, who cares about whether it's economically viable or not? That's not the point, is it? People will call for more immigration because they say that that's good for the economy. People don't care about whether it's good for your economy or not. We want our sovereignty back. We want control of our borders back. We want control of immigration back. We want to send all the people that have been brought in here to replace us. We want to send all of them back. And the Brexit vote was a proxy vote against immigration. Yet Elton John thinks that because it's not actually going to make a profit out of it, people weren't aware of that, and they would have voted differently if they'd been told that it wasn't going to make a profit. Again, he's projecting his own attitude there onto everybody else, just thinking about money. He added, the Brexit process was as confusing as walking through Hampton Court maze blindfolded, being turned around 16 times, and trying to find your way out. The Brexit process only sounds confusing because the government want people to think that it's confusing. Really, it's quite simple. You just say, we're going to leave tomorrow. We're going to leave on World Trade Organization terms. It's already there. It's already laid out exactly what your relationship is with other countries. You both stick to the World Trade Organization rules, and then you can tailor them to make your own bespoke trade deals. But the framework that you use is just the WTO terms. It's as simple as that. It's not complicated. It's Theresa May and the Remainers that have hijacked the government that have made it complicated. And by interfering in this, he really shows how little he actually knows about the process, how little he actually knows about politics and what Brexit is. Elton John announced last year he would be retiring from touring after his current 3-year farewell tour, saying he wanted to spend time with the two infants that he purchased. And I added that little bit there at the end, because that's what it is, that's what he's done. He's basically looks at children as if they're commodities that can be bought, accessories that he can walk around with and pretend that they are his own. If he had any concern at all for those children, he would have left them with their mother and father. He wouldn't have deprived them of their mother and thought that he could do a better job. If he's not able to produce his own children, then he shouldn't have them, to be honest. And if he had a woman, he could have children with a woman. He's obviously not interested in that. He just wants to have deviant sex. And deviant sex is not going to naturally produce your own children, so he thinks he can just purchase them, which is child abuse. And yet we all go along with it, apart from Russia, of course. Russia won't have that. Russia knows that goes against nature, it goes against God, it goes against tradition, goes against everything. And yet Elton John is proud of doing this. He's proud of having stolen these, bought these children. I mean, the mother, I mean, think of what sort of a mother sells her children to a homosexual. A lot of them should be up on charges of child abuse. It's disgusting. But I guess the silver cloud to all of this is that he will be retiring from touring. Let's hope he retires from opening his mouth in public as well. Anyway, thank you very much for listening today. I'll be back next Monday, hopefully with Max Musson. And of course, I hope you all have a great week ahead of you.
Listening to Radio Aryan for an alternative to the anti-white system on RadioAryan.com.